morning rain, with no place to go. Down on runway number 9, 747 set to go. But I'm stuck here on the ground, where the cold wind blows.
Now, I don't know what airline old Jerry Lee Lewis was on that he had to wait to take off. I do know the weather plays a factor in flying, and the major airlines all have their own meteorologists. Aviation meteorology is just one of the topics on this week's edition of Jet Streaming.
Hear the night engines roar. See the silver bird on high.
Hello and welcome to Jet Streaming, a podcast devoted to those of us who can't get enough of the weather. I'm Kathy Werzer, along with Minnesota Public Radio meteorologist Paul Huttner and University of Minnesota meteorologist and climatologist Mark Seely. Hi, guys.
Hey, Kathy.
Good to be here, Kathy.
It's always good to be somewhere, I think. Now, you two are well-traveled and know that sometimes your flight may be delayed due to bad weather because, as we all know, Mother Nature's moods are tough to predict at times. But each major airline has its own team of meteorologists whose job it is to help pilots make decisions on the best flight path that only will make the ride smoother, but consider factors like conserving fuel. And joining us on Jet Streaming to talk about aviation meteorology is Tom Fahey. He's a meteorologist with Minnesota-based Northwest Airlines. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Kathy.
Tell me about your staff of meteorologists. How big is it?
Sure. We have 22 staff here at Northwest Airlines headquarters in Minneapolis at the airport, and we cover just about the entire northern hemisphere and a little bit of the southern hemisphere.
Wow. Mm.
My goodness. And here we are, Tom, in the middle of the summer season, the summer travel season, and I'm sure you and your staff are quite busy. I can't help but think about, in terms of international travel, you have to provide consideration, for example, of tropical storms as they develop and track both in the Pacific and the Atlantic basins for these kinds of flights. I wondered if you could describe what kinds of considerations you take when you're forecasting for, say, routes from North America to Asia or North America to Europe, and you've got tropical storm situations to cope with.
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to give a little bit of perspective. We had an example of just that over this weekend. There was a typhoon by the name of Man Yi that was coming out of the western Pacific and recurving towards the east near Japan, affecting Northwest Tokyo hub, where Northwest flies in and out of Narita International Airport. So we had a fair amount of planning that was done for that typhoon that just brushed Tokyo. I can give a little bit more background about it if that would be helpful for you about how we did the planning.
Is it tough to plan around you would think it would be tough to plan around a tropical storm, or in the case of a hurricane, I think it would be pretty difficult, wouldn't it?
The planning around it en route is really the easiest part. It's where you have a specific airport that you have to land at where the biggest challenges are, especially focusing in on exact timing of when the strongest winds and crosswinds for landing and turbulence and wind shear.
Tom, it's Paul Huttner here. I used to work in the operational end of the business of meteorology, and I know from experience that there's a lot of companies that can save and maximize their profits by accurate weather forecasts, electric utilities, gas utilities, and I know airlines are among those. How much money can an airline save in fuel costs and other costs by your staff providing accurate weather forecasts, say, in a single flight or even in a year?
Yeah, we've done a number of studies on that, and a real general quick answer to that is we've demonstrated that at least 3 times the investment in the staff gets returned to the airline under a real conservative estimate on an annual basis.
Wow, that's quite substantial. In terms of the pilots, at Northwest. Tom, what's been your experience? In fact, if you could highlight for us, what are the one or two most common questions asked of your staff by pilots?
The main concern of the pilots is certainly the safety, and secondary, the efficiency of the operation, which is a very close second. So it's mainly the question is, you know, where are the weather hazards that I'm going to experience today? We have a large team, in addition to meteorologists, that help answer that question. Flight dispatchers are the other big group that are responsible for every single flight and actually selecting the route. Meteorology provides the decision-making tools and information that help the flight dispatchers coordinate with the pilots and select the route.
So once a pilot gets up there, Tom, and decides, you know, I'm seeing conditions here that I'm not real comfortable with, can he then contact the meteorologists on the ground to kind of talk back and forth about maybe changing that flight path?
Yeah, the pre-flight route selection is done, and naturally the weather is not 100% accurate. We'd like to think we get close to that, but you never do exactly make it. So there are tweaks that are done en route. The ways that are handled, one is there's a continual watch done by the flight dispatcher, and there's also updates that are sent right up to the flight deck in what you could think of as instant messaging to an aircraft. And there's a lot of automation that sorts the information to make sure that the pilot doesn't get overwhelmed with information about activity that's going on hundreds of miles away that isn't going to affect their flight. It's real focused info that's updated. It's in a text format now, and there's some work going towards providing actual graphics of weather hazards uplinked to the aircraft.
Tom, that was my next question, too. On board for the pilots, what specifically do they have? I'm thinking of, do they have an onboard radar of some sort? Are they accessing, you know, NEXRAD radars from the National Weather Service so that when they're trying to navigate through thunderstorms, are they making that call from the cockpit, or are they getting guidance from the ground on that?
Again, we divide it into the pre-flight and the en route. Naturally, pre-flight, there's opportunity to view a lot of graphics. Once they're airborne on the flight deck, there's a new set of tools that they're using. One is, as Paul, you had indicated, the airborne radar. Every single aircraft in the Northwest fleet is equipped with a radar that the pilot has complete control over and can tilt the beam up and down and look at what's immediately ahead. Also, air traffic controllers, when they're in radar controlled coverage, provide some additional information. And finally, the people on the ground provide that verbal description of the picture to help anticipate and help the crews make those final decisions about tweaking their route.
What are the toughest weather elements to forecast for pilots?
You can break it up into the winter half of the year and the summer half of the year.
Okay.
And this time of year, it's the convection, thunderstorms, that are the biggest challenge for safe operation and efficient operation. The winter, it goes to clear air turbulence and mountain wave type activity that are the biggest focus.
Well, Tom Fahey, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We learned a lot. I'm glad to hear that there are weather radars on those planes.
Me too.
I learned something new here. That's good.
All right.
Thank you, Tom. Our best to your staff.
Sure. You're welcome, Kathy. And Paul and Mark, good talking with you.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that. That's Tom Fahey, a meteorologist with Northwest Airlines.
There's a strange shift in the breeze, and the weathermen are naming storms in the Atlantic and Gulf seas. There's a change in the weather, if only by degrees, and we're watching for the next hurricane. hurricane.
Now, as Tom Fahey mentioned, guys like him need to keep in mind tropical depressions and storms and plotting Atlantic and Pacific routes for airlines. And to that end, the hurricane season is in full swing. And so far, so good. We haven't had any major storms. If and when that first tropical storm morphs into a hurricane, its name will be Andrea. There's a list of 2007 names for hurricanes, which prompted us weather geeks here at Jet Streaming to wonder who the heck is the person who names hurricanes anyway. Actually, Paul Huttner wanted to know that.
Yeah, blame it on me.
Yeah.
You're right.
He asked the question.
That's me.
Now, we know that Keith Heidorn is not the guy, but he has good information on the process. Keith is known as the weather doctor. He's from British Columbia, Canada. Keith, how are you this morning?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. So far, so good.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about the background of naming hurricanes.
Well, if you go back really, really far, like two or three centuries, major storms always sort of developed some name locally or historically based on, a lot of times in the Caribbean, it would be for the Saints' Day that it struck, if that was it, or a catastrophe, a certain ship went down. There was the Rising Sun hurricane of 1700 that sunk the ship, the Rising Sun. And then some more recently, we can remember those in the 1900s of the Galveston hurricane of 1900, which was named after the city that sustained the most damage, and the Labor Day hurricane of 1935, which struck on Labor Day in the Miami area. So that was sort of the impetus to the start of giving them names, but that was usually because communication was slow, was something that happened after the fact. And the start to naming them kind of as they were around and being watched by various weather agencies really started perhaps best during the Second World War.
Keith, Paul Huttner here. We hear about the colorful stories, shall we say, of naming these storms. Some of the Pacific names after wives and girlfriends, and of course women's names were used for so many years. Was there an uproar, or what was the change to add men's names in 1979?
Well, it was kind of, there was a bit of a change. I mean, the argument always got to be, well, they're hurricanes, not himmicanes. But, I guess it was women felt a little bit put out. And in fact, actually, even before that, there was a great uproar when they first started in the 1950s, and Hurricanes Carol and Hazel. And when Carol hit New England, there was a major, in some of the papers, major complications of it, because they said, well, why should we name, a mean, bad storm after such a nice woman's name? But it caught on, and as the years evolved in the Atlantic, because each basin has its own set of names, the Atlantic storms in 78 started with the alternating with the men, and then the language, their combination of choices between English, Spanish, and French names.
Keith, can I ask, could you explain the circumstances by which these names are retired, not to be used again?
The overall aspect of it is the Committee of the World Meteorological Association that does it, and it's usually a storm that for some reason region has a very, very strong impact. So obviously Katrina was retired, Andrew and the like for those that hit the U.S., but others that we may not have heard about, like the one named after me, Hurricane Keith, several years ago, really did a lot of damage with flooding in Belize and Mexico and that area of Central America, and most of it was as a tropical storm. It hit as a hurricane and then stayed over the Yucatan Peninsula area and did that. So one of the reasons for doing it is that, obviously, if you were down in New Orleans and the name sequence came up again with Katrina, a lot of people would just get nervous just hearing that it was, on the way, because they'd have the memory of, the bad storm of a couple of years ago. So the idea was to retire the names out of the list for, actually, officially, they have to be out for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But probably some of the ones like Katrina and Andrew and others will probably always be out.
And, of course, we're still waiting, as I mentioned, for Hurricane Andrea
Actually, I think we're up to C now. There were two real early in May.
Oh, how did I miss those, for goodness sakes? So this just goes to show when you when you try to keep track of everything, it's really tough.
Yeah, especially when you go sort of, you know, it's been quite a while since the tropical storms even formed. I think they were both early, you know, May. One was in May and one was early June, and they mostly stayed out in the Atlantic Ocean.
And that's why we didn't get to hear about them. So we're waiting for a sea hurricane to possibly
I didn't really see where we were in terms of the list of this year.
So far, so good, though, in this season. It's not been it's been fairly quiet, although they keep forecasting that we might run into some problems later on.
Yeah, but the old saying is June too soon and July let fly, and then August, September are usually the worst, and diminishing in October, and hopefully by November, although the season doesn't end till December or till November 30th. You get a few, but what's happened the last few years with that record-breaking year of 2005? It's quite a lot to hope we can go through the year without a good handful of storms developing.
Well, we'll see what happens. Keith, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. That's Keith Hyadorn. He's known as the Weather Doctor, and he's from British Columbia, Canada. And that leads us to the weather website of the week. Yes, I like the Weather Doctor's website. That's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here it is. islandnet.com/, that little squiggly thing, CSEE/weather/doctor.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff on
there. He does. But if you get confused, just go to Google, put in the Weather Doctor in quotes, it comes right up.
Yep.
That's simple. Good information there on a number of weather-related issues, including what weather smells like. Yes. You guys are looking at me like, what?
I'll have my dog read that one.
Thank you. You've heard some people say it smells like rain. Well, there is a scientific basis for that, and Keith explains it on his website. We should talk about that someday.
Absolutely.
Weather smells. I like that. And while we're talking about rain, I think that leads nicely into a new segment here on Jet Streaming. Periodically, we think it would be nice to celebrate the importance the weather plays in literature. So every so often, we'll read a snippet of a novel that has an especially stirring weather-related scene or a poem that fits our meteorological meanderings. So Professor Seely, you have in front of you an appropriate poem.
Oh my goodness. Here we go. From Langston Hughes, a little positive vision of rain. This one's titled April Rain Song. Let the rain kiss you. Let the rain beat upon your head with silver liquid drops. Let the rain sing you a lullaby. The rain makes still pools on the sidewalk. The rain makes running pools in the gutter. The rain plays a little sleep song on our roof at night. And I love the rain.
Very nice.
Beautiful.
Very nice.
Our very own
lovely.
Walt Whitman. That was nice, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. And if you have a suggestion for our literary weather segment, do drop us a line by going to minnesotapublicradio.org and head to the podcasting section. We are Jet Streaming. Thank you, Mark Seely.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Paul Huttner.
Good to be here.
And thanks to you for listening. I'm Kathy Werzer for Jet Streaming. Until next week, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.